cold, or gave a start when she realized someone had spoken to her. There a serving woman stared at nothing in the middle of the floor before coming to herself with a shake, or a novice darted frightened glances at the sisters. Matt was not quite a cat set among the pigeons, but he came close. Just the fact that Rand knew where they were seemed enough to set a chill. Avienda occasioned less comment, but the sisters could not help talking about her, and not only to change the subject. It was not every day that a Wilder simply appeared on her own 2 feet, especially with such remarkable strength, and an Aiel besides. That last truly fascinated every sister. No Aiel had ever trained in the tower, and few Aes Sedai had ever entered the Aiel waste. A single question sufficed to learn where she was being held. Not held in name, but Elaine knew how Aes Sedai could be when they wanted a woman to become a novice. "She will be in white by nightfall," Akarin said confidently. A slim brown, she nodded for emphasis with almost every word. The two sisters with her nodded just as surely. Tisking under her breath, Elaine hurried into the street. Ahead of her she could see Nynaeve practically trotting and looking over her shoulder so often that she was running into people. Elaine thought about catching up. She would not mind having company, but she was not about to run in this heat, concentration or no, and that seemed the only way. Even so, she did lift her skirt slightly and hurried. Before she had gone 50 paces, she felt Birgitta coming closer and turned to see her running down the street. Arena was with her, but she stopped a little way off and folded her arms with a scowl. The woman was an impossible little wretch, and she certainly had not changed her opinions because Elaine really was Aes Sedai now.
"I thought you should know," Birgitta said quietly.
"I just heard that when we leave for Ebu Dar, Van Deen and Adelius are going too."
"I see," Elaine murmured.
It could be that the pair were going to join Merlilla for some reason, though there were already 3 Aes Sedai at Tylin's court, or maybe they had a mission of their own in Ebu Dar. She did not believe either. Arena had her mind set, and so did the hall. Elaine and Nynaeve were to be accompanied by 2 real Aes Sedai as chaperones. "She does understand she isn't going." Birgitta glanced the way Elaine was staring at Arena, then shrugged. "She understands. She is not happy over it. Myself, I can hardly wait to be gone." Elaine hesitated only a moment. She had promised to keep secrets, which she did not like, but she had not promised to stop trying to convince the other woman there was no need and no point.
"Birgitta, Egwene, no."
"Why not?" Elaine had not had Birgitta for a warder long before she decided that when she bonded Rand, she would somehow make him promise to do as he was told, at least when it was important. Lately, she had decided on another provision. He was going to have to answer her questions. Birgitta answered when she chose, evaded when she chose, and sometimes just put on a stubborn face, as she did now. "Tell me why not, and if it's a good reason, I'll never ask again." At first, Birgitta just glowered, but then she took Elaine's arm and very nearly hustled her to the mouth of an alley. No one passing by glanced at them twice, and Arena remained where she was, if darker of face than before. But Birgitta still looked around carefully and spoke in a whisper. "Always when the wheel spun me out, I was born, lived, and died without ever knowing I was bound to the wheel. I only knew that in between, until I ran Riod. Sometimes I became known, even famous, but I was like everyone else, not somebody out of a legend. This time I was ripped out, not spun out. For the first time wearing flesh, I know who I am. For the first time other people can know, too. Tom and Julin do. They say nothing, but I am sure. They don't look at me the way they do other people. If I said I was going to climb a glass mountain and kill a giant with my bare hands, they'd just ask if I needed any help on the way, and they would not expect me to."
"I don't understand," Elaine said slowly, and Birgitta sighed and let her head hang. "I don't know that I can live up to that. In other lives I did what I had to, what seemed to be right. Enough for Marion or Joanna or any woman. Now I'm Brigida of the stories. Everyone who knows will expect. I feel like a feather dancer walking into a Tovan conclave. Elaine did not ask. When Brigida mentioned things from past lives, the explanations were usually more confusing than ignorance. That is nonsense, she said firmly, taking the other woman by the arms. I know, and I certainly don't expect you to kill any giants. Egwene doesn't either, and she already knows. As long as I don't admit it, Brigida muttered. It's as if she didn't. Don't bother saying that's nonsense, too. I know it is, but that changes nothing. Then what about this? She is the Amyrlin, and you are a warder. She deserves your trust, Brigida. She needs it. Are you done with her yet? Irena demanded from a pace away. If you're going to go away and leave me, the least you can do is help me with my archery the way you said you would. I will think on it, Brigida told Elaine quietly. Turning to Irena, she caught the woman's braid at the base of her neck. We will speak of archery, she said, pushing her up the street. But first we will speak of manners. Shaking her head, Elaine suddenly remembered Avienda and hurried on. The house was not far. It took her a moment to recognize Avienda. Elaine was used to seeing her in Cadinsor, with her dark reddish hair cut short, not in skirt and blouse and shawl with hair below her shoulders, and held back from her face by a folded kerchief. At first glance, she did not appear to be in any difficulty. Sitting rather awkwardly in a chair, Aiel were unused to chairs, she seemed to be peacefully sipping tea with five sisters in a circle in the sitting room. Houses that sheltered Aes Sedai had such things, though Elaine and Nynaeve were still in their cramped little room. At second glance, Avienda was casting hunted looks at the Aes Sedai over the rim of her teacup. There was no time for a third glance. On sight of Elaine, Avienda jerked to her feet and dropped her cup to the clean-swept floor. Elaine had seen few Aiel except in the Stone of Tyr, but she did know they hid their emotions, and Avienda did it very well. Only now, naked pain painted her face. I'm sorry, Elaine told the room smoothly, but I must take her away from you for a little while. Perhaps you can talk to her later. Several of the sisters hesitated on the brink of protest, though there should have been none. She was clearly the strongest in the room by far, except for Avienda, and none of the Aes Sedai was a sitter or part of Shiriam's council. She was very happy that Mirella was not there, since she lived in this house. Elaine had made her choice of green and been accepted, only to discover that Mirella was the head of the green Agyne Salidar. Mirella, who had not even been Aes Sedai 15 years. From things that had been said, Elaine knew there were greens in Salidar who had worn the shawl at least 50, though not a one showed a grey hair. Had Mirella been there, all Elaine's strength would have counted for nothing if the head of her Aja wanted to retain Avienda. As it was, only Shana, a pop-eyed white who reminded Elaine of a fish, went as far as opening her mouth further, and she closed it again, though rather sullenly, when Elaine arched an eyebrow at her. The five were more than a bit tight-lipped, but Elaine ignored the tension. Thank you, she said with a smile she did not feel. Avienda slung a dark bundle on her back, but hesitated until Elaine actually asked her to come. In the street, Elaine said, I apologize for that. I'll see it does not happen again. She could manage that, she was sure. Or Egwene could, surely. There are not many places to talk alone, I'm afraid. My room is rather hot this time of day. We could try to find some shade or have some tea if they haven't already filled you with it. Your room. It was not exactly curt, but plainly Avienda did not want to talk. Not yet. Abruptly, she darted to a passing cart filled with firewood and snatched out a branch meant to be broken for kindling, longer than her arm and thicker than her thumb. Rejoining Elaine, she began peeling it with her belt knife. The sharp blade shaved away smaller branches like a razor. The pain was gone from her face. She seemed determined now. Elaine eyed her sideways as they walked. She would not believe Avienda meant her any harm, whatever that lout Matt Coffin said. Then again, she knew a little of Jeito. Avienda had explained some of it when they were in the stone together. Maybe Rand had said or done something. Maybe that bewildering labyrinth of honor and obligation required Avienda to... It did not seem possible. But maybe... When they reached her room, she decided to bring it up first. Facing the other woman, and very deliberately not embracing Sidar, she said, "Matt claims you have come here to kill me." Avienda blinked. "Wetlanders always put everything backwards," she said wonderingly. Laying the stick on the foot of Nynaeve's bed, she put the belt knife beside it carefully. "My near sister Egwene asked me to watch Randall Thor for you, which I promised to do." Bundle and shawl went on the floor beside the door. "I have toe toward her, but greater to you." Unlacing her blouse, she pulled it over her head, then pushed her shift to her waist. "I love Randall Thor, and once I let myself lie with him, I have toe, and I ask that you help me meet it." Turning her back, she knelt in the small space available. "You may use the stick or the knife as you wish. The toe is mine, but the choice is yours." She tilted up her chin, stretching her neck. Her eyes were closed. "Whichever you choose, I accept." Elaine thought her knees were going to buckle. Min had said the third woman would be dangerous, but Avienda? Wait, she said she... With Rand? Her hand twitched toward the knife on the bed, and she folded her arms, trapping her hands. "Get up and put on your blouse. I am not going to hit you. Just a few times." She tightened her arms to hold her hands where they were. "And I am certainly not going to touch that knife. Please put it away." She would have handed it to the other woman, but she was not certain she was safe to touch a weapon right then. "You have no toe toward me." She believed that was the phrase. "I love Rand, but I don't care that you love him too." The lie burned her tongue. Avienda had actually lain with him? Twisting around on her knees, Avienda frowned. "I am not certain I understand. Are you proposing that we share him? Elaine, we are friends, I think, but we must be as first sisters if we are to be sister wives. It will take time to know if we can be that." Realizing her mouth was hanging open, Elaine closed it. "I suppose it will," she said faintly. Min kept saying they would share him, but certainly not that way. Even the thought was indecent. "It is a little more complicated than you know. There's another woman who loves him, too." Avienda was on her feet so fast, she simply seemed to be one place, then the other. "What is her name?" Her green eyes blazed, and she had the knife in her hand. Elaine almost laughed. One moment talking about sharing, the next as fierce as me, she finished, not at all pleased with the thought. This could have been worse, much worse. It could have been Berylaine. Since it had to be somebody, it might as well be Avienda, and I might as well deal with it instead of kicking my skirts like a child. Seating herself on the bed, she folded her hands in her lap. "Do sheathe that and sit down, Avienda, and please put on your blouse. I have a great deal to tell you. There is a woman, my friend, my near sister, named Min." Avienda did clothe herself, but a considerable time passed before she sat, and considerably more before Elaine could convince her that they should not combine to do Min in. She agreed to that, at least. Reluctantly, she finally said, "I must get to know her. I will not share him with a woman I cannot love as a first sister." That with a studying look at Elaine, who sighed. Avienda would consider sharing him with her. Min was ready to share him with her. Was she the only one of the three who was normal? By the map under her mattress, Min should be in Camelin soon, or maybe already was. She did not know what she wanted to have happen there, only that Min should use her viewings to help him, which meant Min had to stay close to him, while Elaine went to Ebudar. Is anything in life ever simple, Avienda? Not when men are involved. Elaine was not sure which surprised her more, to find that she was laughing, or that Avienda was. Chapter 41. A Threat. Riding slowly through Camelin under a baking mid-morning sun, Min really saw little of the city. She hardly noticed the people and sedan chairs, wagons and coaches that clogged the streets, except to guide her bay mare around them. One of her dreams had always been to live in a great city and travel to strange places, but today colorful towers covered in glittering tiles and sweeping vistas, as the street rounded a hill, passed all but unseen. Clumps of Aiels striding through the crowds with space opening around them got a second glance, and so did patrols of hawk-nosed, often bearded men on horseback, but only because they reminded her of the stories they had begun hearing while still in Murundi. Mirana had been angered by those, and by the charred evidence of Dragonsworn they had come on twice, but Min thought some of the other Aes Sedai were worried. The less said about what they thought of Rand's amnesty, the better. At the edge of the plaza in front of the royal palace, she drew Wild Rose's rein and blotted her face carefully with a lace-edged handkerchief that she tucked back up her coat sleeve. Only a few people dotted the great oval, perhaps because Aiel guarded the open main gates of the palace. More Aiel stood on marble balconies or glided across high, colonnaded walks like leopards. The white lion of Andor stirred in a breeze above the tallest of the palace domes. Another crimson flag flew from one of the spires, a little lower than the white dome, lifted just enough by the breeze for her to make out the ancient symbol of Aes Sedai, black and white. Though Aiel made her glad she had refused the offer of a pair of warders as escort, she suspected Aiel and warders might strike sparks. Well, it had not been precisely an offer, and she had refused by sneaking away an hour before time by the clock on the inn mantelpiece. Mirana was from Camelin, and when they arrived before dawn, she took them straight to what she said was the finest inn in the new city. It was not the Aiel who kept Min sitting there, however. Not entirely, though she had heard all sorts of terrible stories about black-veiled Aiel. Her coat and breeches were the finest, softest wool that could be found in Salidar, in a pale rose, with tiny blue and white flowers embroidered on lapels and cuffs, and down the outsides of the legs. Her shirt was cut like a boy's, too, but in cream silk. In Baerlon, after her father died, her aunts had tried to make her into what they had called a decent, proper woman, though maybe her aunt Myron had understood that after 10 years running about the mines in boys' clothes, it might be too late to stuff her into dresses. They had tried even so, and she had fought them as stubbornly as she refused to learn to wield a needle. Aside from that unfortunate episode serving tables at the Miner's Rest, a rough place, but she had not stayed long. Rana, Jan, and Myron had seen to that emphatically when they found out, and no matter that she was 20 then. Aside from that one time, she had never worn a dress willingly. Now she was thinking that maybe she should have had one made instead of this coat and breeches. A dress in silk, cut snug at the bodice and low, and... "He'll have to take me as I am," she thought, twitching the reins irritably. "I'm not changing for any man." Only her clothes would have been as plain as any farmer's not that long ago. Her hair had not been in ringlets almost to her shoulders, and a small voice whispered, "You'll be whatever you think he wants you to be." She kicked it down as hard as she had ever kicked any stableman who tried to cut rough, and heeled Wildrose only a little more gently. She hated the very idea of women being weak when it came to men. There was just one problem. She was fairly certain she was going to find out just what it was like very soon now. Dismounting in front of the palace gates, she patted the mare, to tell her she had not meant the kick, while eyeing the Aiel uncertainly. Half were women, all but one considerably taller than she. The men towered like Rand, most of them, and some even more. Everyone was watching her. Well, they seemed to be watching everything, but definitely her as well, and not one blinked that she could see. With those spears and bucklers, the bows on their backs and quivers at their hips, the heavy knives, they looked ready to kill. Those black strips of cloth hanging down onto their chests must be the veils. She had heard Aiel would not kill you without covering their faces. I hope that's so. She addressed herself to the shortest of the women. Framed by bright red hair as short as Min's used to be, her tanned face might as well have been carved from wood, but she was even a little shorter than Min. "I've come to see Randall Thor," Min said, a trifle unsteadily. "The dragon reborn?" Did none of them ever blink? "My name is Min. He knows me, and I have an important message for him." The red-haired woman turned to the other Aiel, gesticulating quickly with her free hand. The rest of the women laughed as she turned back. "I will take you to him, Min. But if he does not know you, you will leave much faster than you go in." Some of the Aiel women laughed at that, too. "I am called Enaila." "He knows me," Min told them, flushing. She had a pair of knives up her coat sleeves that Tom Marilyn had showed her how to use, but she had the feeling this woman could take them away and peel her with them. An image flickered above Enaila's head and was gone. A wreath of some sort. Min had no idea what it meant. "Am I supposed to take my horse in, too? I don't think Rand wants to see her." To her surprise, some of the Aiel chuckled, men and women, and Enaila's lips twitched as if she wanted to. A man came to take Wild Rose. Min thought he was Aiel, too, despite the downcast eyes and white robe, and she followed Enaila through the gates, across a broad courtyard and into the palace proper. It was something of a relief to see servants in red and white livery scurrying along the tapestry-lined corridors, warily eyeing the Aiel who also walked the halls, but no more so than they might a strange dog, really. She had begun to think she would find the palace filled with none but Aiel, Rand surrounded by them, maybe dressed in coat and breeches all in shades of brown and grey and green, staring at her without blinking. Before tall, wide doors carved with lions and standing open, Enaila halted, wiggling her hand quickly at the Aiel on guard. They were all women. One, flaxen-haired and considerably taller than most men, waggled fingers back. "Wait here," Enaila said, and went in. Min took one step after her, and a spear was casually held in her path by the flaxen-haired woman. Or perhaps not casually, but Min did not care. She could see Rand. He sat on a great gilded throne that seemed made entirely of dragons, in a red coat worked heavily with gold, holding some sort of green and white tasseled spearhead of all things. Another throne stood on a tall pedestal behind him, gilded also, but with a lion picked out in white gemstones against red. The lion throne, so the rumors said. At that moment he could have been using it for a footstool for all she cared. He looked tired. He was so beautiful her heart ached. Images danced around him continuously. With Aes Sedai and warders, that deluge was something she tried to escape. She could not tell what they meant any more often than with anyone else, but they were always there. With Rand she had to make herself see them, because otherwise she would just stare at his face. One of those images she had seen every time she saw him. Countless thousands of sparkling lights like stars or fireflies rushed into a great blackness, trying to fill it up, rushed in and were swallowed. There seemed to be more lights than she had ever seen before, but the darkness swallowed them at a greater rate, too. And there was something else, something new, an aura of yellow and brown and purple that made her stomach clench. She tried viewing the nobles facing him. Surely that was what they were, in all those fine embroidered coats and rich silk gowns, but there was nothing to see. That was true of most people most of the time, and when she did see something, most often she had no notion what it foretold. Even so, she narrowed her eyes, straining. If she could make out just one image, one aura, it might be a help to him. From the stories she had heard since entering Andor, he could use all the help he could find. With a heavy sigh, she gave it up, finally. Squinting and straining did no good unless there was something to see in the first place. Suddenly she realized the nobles were withdrawing, Rand was on his feet, and Denyla was waving, motioning her to enter. Rand was smiling. Min thought her heart might burst out of her chest. So this was what it felt like for all those women she had laughed at, throwing herself at a man's feet. No, she was not a giddy girl. She was older than he. She had had her first kiss while he still thought getting out of tending sheep was the most fun in the world. She...
Light, please, don't let my knees give way.
Tossing the dragon scepter down carelessly where he had been sitting, Rand bounded from the dais in one leap and rushed down the grand hall. As soon as he reached Min, he caught her under the arms and swung her into the air and around before Dailan and the others were gone. Some of the nobles stared, and were welcome to, for all of him. "Light, Min, but it's good to see your face," he laughed. Considerably better than Dailan's stony features or Alorian's. But if Aemlyn and Darathel and Pellavar and Luon, and all of them, had every one proclaimed their joy that Elaine was on her way to Camelin instead of staring at him with doubt, or even liar in their eyes, he would have been as overjoyed to see Min. When he put her feet back on the floor, she sagged against his chest, clutching his arms and breathing hard. "I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't mean to make you dizzy. It's just that I really am glad to see you." "Well, you did make me dizzy, you wool-headed sheepherder," she mumbled against his chest. Pushing herself away, she glared up at him through long lashes. "I had a very long ride. I arrived in the middle of the night, or might as well, and you tossed me around like a sack of oats. Did you never learn any manners?" "Woolhead," he laughed softly. "Min, you can name me a liar, but I've actually missed hearing you call me that." She did not call him anything. She merely peered up at him, the glare gone completely. Her eyelashes did seem longer than he remembered. Realizing where they were, he took her hand. A throne room was no place for meeting old friends. "Come on, Min. We can have some cool punch in my sitting room. Samara, I am going to my apartments. You can send everybody away." Samara did not look happy about it, but she dismissed all the maidens except for herself and Anila. Both looked a bit sullen, which he did not understand. He had allowed Samara to gather so many inside the palace in the first place only because Dailan and the others were coming. Bashir was out at his horsemen's camp north of the city for the same reason. Maidens for a reminder, Bashir because there could be too many reminders. He hoped the two maidens were not planning on any mothering. They took turns as his guards, more than their share, it seemed to him, but Nandera was as adamant as Sulin had been when it came to him saying who specifically was to do what. He could command Fardarai's Mai, but he was not a maiden, and the other was none of his business. Min studied the tapestries as he led her along the corridor by the hand. She peered at inlaid chests and tables, at golden bowls and tall vases of seafolk porcelain in niches. She examined Anila and Samara head to toe three times each. But she neither looked at him nor spoke a word. His hand engulfed hers, and he could feel the pulse in her wrist racing to beat horses. He hoped she was not really angry over being whirled about. To his great relief, Samara and Anila took places on either side of his door, though they both looked at him when he asked for punch, and he had to repeat himself. In the sitting room, he took off his coat and tossed it over a chair. "Sit, Min, sit. Rest and relax. The punch will be here shortly. You have to tell me everything. Where you've been, how you got here, why you arrived in the night. It isn't safe traveling at night, Min. Now less than ever. I'll give you the best rooms in the palace. Well, the second best. These are the best. And an Aiel escort to take you wherever you want. Any bully boy or strong arm will doff his cap and duck his head if he doesn't run right up the side of a building to get away. For a moment he thought she might laugh, standing there by the door, but instead she drew a deep breath and took a letter from her pocket.
"I can't tell you where I came from. I promised Rand. But Elaine is there and..."
"Saladar," he said, and smiled at the way her eyes widened. "I know a few things, Min. Maybe more than some think I do."
"I see that you do," she said faintly.
She pushed the letter into his hands, then backed away again. Her voice firmed as she added,
"I swore I would give that to you first off. Go ahead and read it."
He recognized the seal, a lily in dark yellow wax, and Elaine's flowing hand in his name, and he hesitated before opening it. Clean breaks were best, and he had made one, but with the letter in his hand, he could not stop himself. He read, then sat down atop his coat and read again. It was certainly short.
"Rand, I have made my feelings clear to you. Know that they have not changed. I hope that you feel for me what I feel for you. Min can help you if you will only listen to her. I love her like a sister, and hope you love her as I do. Elaine."
Her ink must have been running out because the last lines were a hurried scrawl, quite unlike the elegance of the rest. Min had been sidling and twisting her head, trying to read the letter without being too obvious, but when he lifted himself to pull his coat out, the fat little man Angreal was in the pocket, she scurried back again.
"Do women all try to drive a man crazy?" he muttered.
"What?" He stared at the letter, talking half to himself.
"Elaine is so beautiful I can't help staring, but half the time I don't know whether she wants me to kiss her or kneel at her feet. Truth to tell, sometimes I did want to kneel, and worship, the light help me. She says here I know how she feels. Two letters she's written me before this, one full of love, the other saying she never wanted the sight of me again. The times I've sat wishing the first one was true, and the other some sort of joke or mistake, or... And Avienda. She's beautiful, too, but every day with her was a battle. No kisses from her, not any more, and no doubts how she feels. She was even happier to get away from me than I was to see her go. Only I keep expecting to see her when I turn around. And when she isn't there, it's as if something inside me is missing. I actually miss the battle, and there are moments when I find myself thinking, there are things worth fighting for."
Something in Min's silence made him look up. She was staring at him with a face as blank as an Aes Sedai.
"Did nobody ever tell you it isn't polite to talk to one woman about another?"
Her voice was absolutely flat.
"Much less two other women?"
"Min, you're a friend," he protested. "I don't think of you as a woman." It was the wrong thing to say. He knew it as soon as the words left his mouth.
"Oh!"
Tossing back her coat, she placed her hands on her hips. It was not the all-too-familiar angry pose. Her wrists were twisted so her fingers pointed up, and somehow that made it very different. She stood with one knee bent, and that... For the first time, he really saw her. Not just Min, but the way she looked. Not the usual plain brown coat and breeches, but pale red and embroidered. Not the usual rough-cut hair that barely covered her ears, but ringlets brushing her neck.
"Do I look like a boy?"
"Min, I..."
"Do I look like a man? A horse?"
In one quick stride, she reached him and plumped herself down in his lap.
"Min," he said, aghast, "what are you doing?" "Convincing you I'm a woman, woolhead. Don't I look like a woman? Don't I smell like a woman?"
She smelled faintly of flowers, now that he noticed.
"Don't I feel... Well, enough of that. Answer the question, sheepherder."
It was the sheepherder and woolhead that stilled his alarm. The truth was, she felt remarkably nice sitting there. But she was Min, who thought he was a country boy with hay in his hair and not very much common sense.
"Light, Min, I know you're a woman. I didn't mean any insult." You're a friend, too. It's just that I feel comfortable with you. It doesn't matter if I look like a fool with you. I can say things to you I wouldn't say to anybody else, not even Matter Perrin. When I'm around you, all the knots unwind, all the tightness in my shoulders I don't even feel till it goes. Do you see, Min? I like being around you. I've missed you.
Folding her arms, she looked at him sideways, frowning. Her leg twitched. If her foot had reached the floor, she would have been tapping it.
All that about Elaine and this Avienda. Who is she, by the way? Sounds to me as if you love them both.
Oh, stop jerking about. You owe me some answers, saying I'm not. Just answer me. Do you love both of them?
Maybe I do, he said slowly. Light help me, I think maybe I do. Does that make me a lecher man or just a greedy fool?
Her mouth opened and closed. She tossed her head angrily and compressed her lips. He hurried on before she could tell him which one she had picked to fit him. He did not really want to hear it from her.
It hardly matters now anyway. It is done with. I sent Avienda away, and I will not let her come back. I won't let myself within a mile of her or Elaine. 10 miles if I can help it.
For the love of... Why, Rand? What gives you the right to make a choice like that for them?
Min, can't you see? I'm a target. Any woman I love becomes a target, too. Even if the arrow is aimed at me, it could hit her. It could be aimed at her.
Breathing out heavily, he leaned back with his arms on the rose-carved chair arms. She twisted a little, studying him with the most serious expression he'd ever seen on her face. Min was always smiling, always a little amused by everything. Just as well she was not now. He was deadly serious himself.
Lan told me he and I are alike in some ways, and it's true. He said there are men who radiate death. Himself, me. When a man like that falls in love, the best gift he can give her is to put as much distance as possible between himself and her. You see that, don't you?
What I see.
She was silent for a moment.
Very well. I'm your friend, and I am glad you know it. But don't bother thinking I will give up. I will convince you I am not a man or a horse.
Min, I said I... Oh, no, sheepherder, not good enough.
She wriggled around on his lap in a way that made him clear his throat and pinned a finger against his chest.
I want tears in your eyes when you say it. I want drool on your chin and a stammer in your voice. You needn't think I won't make you pay.
Rand could not help laughing.
Min, it really is good to have you here. All you see is a mudfoot from the Two Rivers, isn't it?
Her mood changed lightning quick.
I see you, Rand,
she said, strangely quiet.
I see you.
Clearing her throat, she arranged herself primly, hands on knees. If it was possible to be prim, sitting as she was, anyway.
I might as well get on with why I came. Apparently you know about Saladar. That is going to raise a few eyebrows, I tell you. What you probably do not know is that I didn't come alone. There's an embassy from Saladar in Camelin to see you.
Luz Theron muttered, thunder in the distance. Mention of Aes Sedai always roused him since Alana and the bonding, if not as much as being around Taim. Even with Luz Theron grumbling, Rand very nearly smiled. He had suspected as soon as Min handed him the letter from Elaine. Confirmation was almost as good as proof that they were frightened, as he thought. What else could they be, rebels driven to hiding, right on the edge of White Cloak power? Very likely wishing they knew how to creep back into the White Tower, too, chewing their fingers over how to wriggle back into Elida's good graces. From what he knew of Elida, they had small chance, and they had to know it better than he. If they had sent an embassy to the Dragon Reborn, to a man who could channel, then they must be all but ready to accept his protection. This was not like Elida, who apparently thought he could be bought, and likely kept in a wicker cage like a song sparrow. Egwene's nebulous promises of Aes Sedai who supported him were about to be fulfilled. "Who came with you?" he asked. "Maybe I know her." He did not really know any Aes Sedai except Moraine, who was dead, but he had met a few. If she was one of those, it might make things a little harder. He really had been Min's farm boy back then, ready to flinch if an Aes Sedai looked at him.
"There's more than one, Rand. Actually, there are 9.
He gave a start, and she went on quickly.
"It is meant for an honor, Rand. 3 times what they'd send a king or queen. Mirana, she's in charge. She's Grey Aja. Mirana will come here alone this afternoon, and no more than one at a time will come anywhere near you unless you feel comfortable. They took rooms at the Crown of Roses in the new city. They practically took it over, with all the warders and servants. Mirana sent me first because I know you, to smooth the way. They don't mean you any harm, Rand, I'm sure of it."
"Of viewing men, or your opinion?" It seemed odd to be carrying on a serious conversation with a woman perched on his knee, but she was Min, after all. That made it different. He just had to keep reminding himself.
"My opinion," she admitted reluctantly. "Rand, I viewed every one of them every day all the long way from Saladar. If they intended any harm, I would have to have seen something. I can't believe nothing would show in that time."
Shifting, she gave him a worried look that quickly changed to a determined firmness.
"I might as well tell you something else while I'm about it. I saw an aura around you in the throne room. Aes Sedai are going to hurt you. Women who can channel, anyway. It was all confused. I'm not sure about the Aes Sedai part. But it might happen more than once. I think that's why it seemed all scrambled."
He looked at her silently, and she smiled.
"I like that about you, Rand. You accept what I can do and what I cannot. You don't ask me if I'm sure or when it's going to happen. You never ask for more than I know."
"Well, I am to ask one thing, Min. Can you be sure these Aes Sedai in your viewing aren't the Aes Sedai you came with?"
"No," she said simply.
That was one thing he liked. She never tried to evade.
"I have to be careful," Luz Theron whispered intently. "Even these half-trained girls can be dangerous with 9 of them. I must, Rand thought firmly.
A moment of confusion from Luz Theron, and then he fled back to the shadowed recesses. He always did now, if Rand spoke to him. The only problem was that Luz Theron seemed to be seeing and hearing more, and intending to act on it. There had not been another incident of his trying to see Saidine, but Rand was careful now. The man wanted Rand's mind and body for his own, thought they were his own. And if he managed to gain control even once, Rand was not certain it would not be just that way. Luz Theron Telamon walking and speaking, while Randall Thor was only a voice in his head.
"Rand," Min said anxiously, "don't look at me like that. I'm on your side if it comes to sides. It might, a little. They think I'll tell them what you say. I won't, Rand. They just want to know how to deal with you, what to expect. But I'll not tell one word you don't want me to. And if you ask me to lie, I will. They do not know about my viewings. Those are yours, Rand. You know I will read anyone you say, including Mirana and the rest."
He forced the snarl from his face, made sure his voice was mild.
"Calm yourself, Min. I know you are on my side."
That was simple truth. Suspecting Min would be like suspecting himself. Luz Theron was dealt with for the moment. It was time to deal with this Mirana and her embassy. "Tell them they can come 3 at a time." That was what Luz Theron had advised in Carrion. No more than 3 at once. The man seemed to believe he could handle 3 Aes Sedai. He seemed more than a little contemptuous of those who called themselves Aes Sedai now. But what had been a limit in Carrion was different here. Mirana wanted him calmed and smoothed down before even one Aes Sedai came near.
Let her chew on an invitation for three to begin, and think what it might mean.
Aside from that, none are to enter the inner city without my permission, and they aren't to try channeling around me. Tell them that, Min. I'll know the moment they take hold of the source, and I will not be pleased. Tell them.
They aren't going to be very pleased either, sheepherder, she said dryly. But I will tell them.
A crash whipped Rand's head around.
Sulan stood just inside the door in her red and white dress, her face so suffused with blood that the scar on her cheek stood out even paler than usual. Her white hair had grown since she put on the livery, but it was still shorter than any of the servants. Mistress Harfor had had it made into a close cap of curls. Sulan hated that. At her feet was a silver tray, bordered in worked gold, with silver-chased golden goblets lying on their sides. The wine pitcher rocked a last time as he looked, and miraculously stopped upright, though there appeared to be as much wine punch on tray and carpet as there could be remaining in the pitcher. Min was halfway into scrambling to her feet when he caught her by the waist and pulled her back down. Time enough and more to drive home that he was done with Avienda, and Min would not mind helping. In fact, after a moment of resistance, she leaned into him and put her head on his chest. Sulan, he said, a good servant does not toss trays about. Now pick it up and do as you're supposed to. Staring at him darkly, she all but quivered. Figuring out how to let her meet her toe while discharging at least some of his obligation to her had been little short of brilliant. Sulan cared for his rooms now, and fetched and carried only for him. She hated it, of course, especially that he saw her doing it every day, but she no longer broke her back scrubbing floors all over the palace or hauling endless streams of heavy water buckets for laundry. He suspected she would rather every Aiel this side of the Dragon Wall saw her shame than allow him to, but he had eased her labors notably, eased his conscience somewhat, and if having to work for him made her decide her toe was met sooner, all to the good. Sulan belonged in cotton sore carrying spears, not in livery folding bed linens. Picking up the tray, she stalked across the room and pushed it roughly onto an ivory inlaid table. As she started to turn away, he said, "This is Min, Sulan. She's my friend. She doesn't know Aiel ways, and I would take it amiss should anything untoward happen to her." It had just occurred to him that the maidens might have their own view of him sending away Avienda and holding another woman almost as soon as she was gone. Their own view and their own way of dealing with it. "In fact, if any harm comes to her, I'll consider it done to me." "Why should any but Avienda wish to harm this woman?" Sulan said grimly. "She gave too much time to dreaming over you, and not enough to teaching you what you should know." Giving herself a shake, she growled, "My lord dragon." He thought it was supposed to be a murmur. She nearly fell over twice in her curtsy before she was upright again, and she slammed the door on her way out. Min twisted her head to look up at him. "I don't think I have ever seen a maid like... Rand, I believe she'd have stabbed you if she had a knife." "Kick me, maybe," he chuckled, "but never stab. She thinks I am her long-lost brother." Confusion clouded Min's eyes. He could see 100 questions rising. "It is a long story. I will tell you another time." Part of it, he would. Nobody was ever going to know what he had to put up with from Anila and Samara and a few others. Well, the maidens all knew already, but no one else. Malayne entered in the Aiel way, which was to say she put her head in at the door, looked around, and then followed with the rest of her. He had never puzzled out what would make an Aiel decide not to come in. Chiefs, wise ones, and maidens had walked in on him in small clothes, in his bed, his bath. Coming closer, the sun-haired wise one settled herself cross-legged on the carpet a few paces in front of him in a clatter of bracelets and arranged her skirts around her with care. Green eyes regarded Min neutrally. This time Min made no effort to get up.
in fact, from the way she was lying against him, head pressed against his chest, breathing slowly, he was not sure she might not be falling asleep. After all, she had said she had reached Camelin in the night. Suddenly he became conscious of his hand fitted in the hollow of her waist, and moved it firmly to the arm of the chair. She sighed almost regretfully, and snuggled against him, going to sleep without a doubt.
"I have news," Malaine said, "and I am uncertain which is the most important. Egwene has gone from the tents. She goes to a place called Salidar, where there are Aes Sedai. These are the Aes Sedai who may uphold you. At her asking, we did not speak to you of them before. But now I will tell you, they are froward, undisciplined, contentious, and full of themselves beyond reason."
Her tone was heated toward the end, and her head was thrust forward. So one of the dreamwalkers in Carrion had spoken to Malaine in her dreams. That was about all he knew of the dreamwalker's skills, and while it could have been useful, they were seldom willing to put it at his disposal. What was different was all that about froward and so forth. Most Aiel behaved as if they thought Aes Sedai might strike them, believed they would deserve it if so, and intended to take the blow without flinching. Even wise ones spoke of Aes Sedai respectfully, if at all. Clearly a few things had changed. All he said, though, was, "I know." If Malaine had any intention of telling him why, she would without his asking. If she did not, asking would get no answers. "About Egwene and Salidar, too. There are 9 from Salidar in Camelin right now. Min here came with them." Min stirred on his chest and murmured something. Luce Theron was grumbling again, just too low to make out, and Rand was glad of the distraction. Min felt good. She would be offended to the sky if she knew. Then again, considering her promise to make him pay, she might laugh. Maybe. She could be quicksilver at times. Malaine showed no surprise at his knowledge, not even shifting her shawl. Since marrying Bale, she seemed to have calmed was not quite the right word. It was much too placid for Malaine. Grown less excitable.
"That was my second news. You must be wary of them, Randall Thor, and use a firm hand. They will respect nothing else."
"Most definitely a change."
"You will have 2 daughters," Min murmured. "Twins like mirrors."
If Malaine had been unsurprised before, she made up for it now. Her eyes went wide, and she gave a start that nearly lifted her from the floor.
"How could you—"
she began incredulously, then stopped to gather herself. Even so, she went on in a breathless voice.
"I myself was uncertain I was with child until this morning. How could you know?"
Min did get up then, giving him a look he knew all too well. It was his fault for some reason. She was not entirely without flaws, if small ones. Fussing with her coat, she looked everywhere except at Malaine, and when her gaze fell on him again, it was a variation of the first look. He had gotten her into this. It was up to him to get her out. "It is all right, Min," he said. "She's a wise one, and I expect she knows things that would curl your hair." Except that already was curly. How did women do that, anyway? "I'm sure she will promise to keep your secret, and you can trust her promise." Malaine almost stumbled over her tongue, promising. Just the same, Rand received another look before Min sat down beside Malaine. Reproachful, maybe. How did she expect him to get her out of it? Malaine would not forget because he asked, but she would keep a promise and a secret. She had kept enough from him. For all her reluctance, once Min began, she gave a much fuller explanation than she had ever given him at one time, perhaps helped by the other woman's constant questions and Malaine's changing attitude as well. It was as if Malaine began to feel that Min's ability made her an equal of sorts, not at all a wetlander.
"It is remarkable," Malaine said at last, "like interpreting the dream without dreaming. 2, you say? Both girls? Bale will be so pleased. Dorinda has given him 3 sons, but we both know he would like a daughter. Min blinked and gave her head a hard shake. Of course, she could not know about sister wives. From there, the two of them passed quickly on to childbirth itself. Neither had ever borne a child, but each had helped midwives. Rand cleared his throat loudly. It was not that any of the details bothered him. He had helped ewe's lamb, mare's foal, and cow's calf. What was irritating was that they sat there with their heads together as though he had ceased to exist. Neither looked around until he cleared his throat again, loud enough that he wondered whether he had strained something. Mullane leaned closer to Min and spoke in a whisper that could have been heard in the next room.
Men always faint. And always at the worst possible time,
Min agreed in the same tone.
What would they think if they could have seen him in Matt's father's barn, blood and birthing fluids to his shoulders and 3 ribs cracked, where he had been kicked because the mare had never foaled before and was frightened? A fine colt that had been, and the mare had not kicked at all the next time.
"Before I faint," he said wryly, joining them on the carpet, "perhaps one of you would like to say some more about the Aes Sedai?"
He would have stood up or sat on the floor before this, had his lap not been full. Among the Aiel, only chiefs had chairs, and a chief's chair was only used for things like pronouncing judgments or receiving the submission of an enemy. Both women were suitably chastened. Neither said anything, but there was ample shifting of shawl, adjusting of coat, and not quite meeting his eye. All that vanished once they got down to talking. Min held tenaciously to her opinion that the Aes Sedai from Saladar meant no harm to Rand and might give aid, suitably handled, which was with all respect in public and in private her reporting to Rand every whisper she overheard.
"I'm not being a traitor, you understand, Mullane. I knew Rand before any Aes Sedai except Moraine, really, and the truth of it is he took my loyalty long before she died."
Mullane did not think Min a traitor, quite the contrary, and seemed to think even better of her. Wise ones did have their own version of the Aiel view of spies, but she argued that, with notable exceptions, Aes Sedai could be trusted as far as Shido, which was to say not until they had been taken captive and made Gaishain. She did not exactly suggest captivity for the Aes Sedai at the Crown of Roses, but she did not miss far.
"How can you trust them, Randalthor? I think they have no honor, except for Egwene Alvear, and she—"
Mullane twitched her shawl again.
"When an Aes Sedai shows me she has as much honor as Egwene, I will trust her, and not before."
For his part, Rand listened more than he spoke, and, saying no more than 12 or so words, learned a great deal. Answering Mullane's arguments, Min ran through the embassy name by name, listing what each woman had said about support for Rand, and in truth admitting that all was not exactly rosy. Mirana Ambry and Karen Stang, of Blue, were both Andorran, and for all that Aes Sedai supposedly forsook all allegiances save the White Tower, perhaps because they were estranged from the Tower, they worried that Rand sat in Camelin and might have murdered Morghaes. Rafella Sindal, also Blue Aja, might be pleased with the changes Rand had made in Tyr, where once channeling had been outlawed and a girl found able to learn was hurried out of the country. But she said little, and Morghaes worried her, too. Sionad Trigun, a Green, mulled over every rumor from her native Cairhien, and kept her own counsel. And Faeldrin Harella, the second Green Sister, sometimes compared Dragonsworn atrocities in Altara and Murundi to what Dragonsworn had done in Taraban, refusing even to talk about the fact that civil war had ripped her land apart before the first man had sworn to the dragon there. No matter how Mullane pressed, though, Min insisted that every one of those Aes Sedai acknowledged Rand to be the dragon reborn, and asked her most carefully all through the journey from Saladar what he was like and how he could be best approached without either offending or frightening him. Rand grunted at that they were worried about frightening him, but Mullane began insisting that if most of the women in the embassy had so much reason to be against Rand, then the embassy as a whole surely could not be trusted far enough to fetch dung for the fire. Min spared him an apologetic grimace and rushed on. Ared Daman had seen as much of Dragonsworn as Darabon,
as well as its own civil war, but Demira Erif, of the Brown Haja, only talked of two things, really. Meeting Rand, and the rumor that he had started some sort of school in Kyrian. No man who started a school could be all bad in Demira's eyes. Berenicia Morsad, a yellow sister from Shinar, had heard from Shinarans in Saladar that Rand had been received in Faldara by the great captain Lord Agomar Jagad, an honor that seemed to carry considerable weight with her. Lord Agomar would hardly have received a ruffian, a fool, or a scoundrel. It weighed almost as heavily with Masuri Sakawa. She was a Brown from Arafel, which bordered Shinar. Finally, there was Valinda Nathanos, who, according to Min, showed an eagerness very unlike the White Aja to have Rand drive Samael out of Ilion. A promise of that, a promise even to try, and Min would not be surprised to see Valinda offer him an oath of fealty. Malayne expressed disbelief, even rolling her eyes. She had never seen an Aes Sedai with that much sense, an attitude Rand found more than surprising, considering that she would probably laugh in his face if he asked for such an oath. Min maintained that it was true, though, whatever the other woman said. "I will show them as much respect as I can without kneeling," Rand told Min when she finally ran down. From Elaine, he added, "And until they show proof of goodwill, I'll trust them not one jot." He thought that should please them both, since each got what she wanted, but from the frowns he received, it pleased neither. After all that arguing, he half expected the pair to be at one another's throats. But it seemed that Malayne's pregnancy and Min's viewing had created a bond. When they stood, the women were all smiles and hugs, and Malayne said, "I did not think I would like you, Min, but I do. And I will name one of the girls after you, because you knew of her first. I must go to tell Bale, so he will not be jealous that Randall Thor knew before him. May you always find water and shade, Min." To Rand, she added, "Watch these Aes Sedai closely, Randall Thor, and give Min your protection when she needs it. They will harm her if they learn she is sworn to you." Of course, she left with exactly the ceremony with which she had arrived, a nod of the head. Which left him alone with Min again, which felt awkward for some reason. Chapter 42. The Black Tower. Rand and Min stood looking at one another, not moving, until finally he said, "Would you like to come out to the farm with me?" She gave a little start at the sound of his voice.
"The farm?"
"It's a school, really, for the men who come for the amnesty." Min's face paled.
"No, I don't think... Mirana will be waiting to hear from me, and I should let them know your rules as soon as possible. Any one of them could wander into the inner city without knowing, and you wouldn't want... I really ought to go."
He did not understand. Without meeting even one of the students, she was afraid of them. Men who could channel. Men who wanted to channel. In anyone else, it would have been understandable. But he could channel, and she was ready to rough his hair and poke his ribs and call him names to his face. "Do you want an escort back to the Crown of Roses? There really are footpaths, even by daylight. Not many, but I would not like anything to happen to you." Her laugh was a bit unsteady. She truly was upset over the farm.
"I took care of myself while you were tending sheep, farm boy."
Abruptly, she had a knife in either hand. A flourish, and they went back up her sleeves, not quite so smoothly as they had come out. In a much more sober tone, she said,
"You must take care of yourself, Rand. Rest. You look tired."
Startlingly, she went a tiptoe and stretched her head up to brush his lips with a kiss.
"It is good to see you too, sheepherder."
And with another laugh, this one delighted, she slipped out. Muttering to himself, Rand put his coat back on and went into his bedchamber to fetch his sword from the back of the wardrobe, a dark, rose-carved thing, tall enough and wide enough for four men's clothes. He really was turning into a randy goat. Min was just having her fun. He wondered how long she intended to keep teasing him for one slip of the tongue. A cloth bag of moderate size, clinking when he lifted it from under his stockings in a drawered chest inlaid with lapis, went into one coat pocket, and a much smaller velvet bag went in atop his ongrial. The silversmith, who had made the contents of the larger, had been more than happy to work for the Dragon Reborn, and had tried to refuse payment for the honor of it. The goldsmith, who had made the single piece in the other bag, had required four times what Bashir said the work was worth, and a pair of maidens to stand over him until it was done. This trip to the farm had been in Rand's mind for some time already. He did not like Taim, and Luce Theron would surge around the man, but he could not go on avoiding the place, especially not now. So far as he knew, Taim had done well at keeping the students out of the city. At least Rand had heard of no incidents, and he would have. But news of Mirana and the embassy would reach the farm eventually, by the supply carts or with new students. And in the way of rumors, nine Aes Sedai would become nine Red Sisters, or 90, hunting men to gentle. Whether the result of that would be students running off in the night, or students coming into Camelin to strike the first blow, he had to quell it before it began. Camelin held too many rumors of Aes Sedai already as it was, another reason he had planned to go out. Alana and Varen and the Two Rivers girls had grown into half the tower, by the word in the streets, and there were plenty of other tales of Aes Sedai sneaking into the city, sneaking through the gates in the night. That story of an Aes Sedai healing stray cats was so prevalent he could almost believe in her himself. But all Bashir's efforts to track the tale down provided as much substance as the tale that the women who escorted the Dragon Reborn everywhere were really Aes Sedai in disguise. Unconsciously, Rand turned, staring at a wall banded with white reliefs of lions and roses, staring beyond it. Alana was no longer at Kulain's Hound. She was on edge. Had she not been Aes Sedai, he would have said her nerves were jagged. Once last night he had awakened, sure she was weeping. The feel had been that strong. Sometimes he almost found himself forgetting she was there, until something like her waking him happened. He supposed you really could grow used to anything. This morning Alana was eager as well. Eager seemed the best word. He would wager all of Camelin that the plumb line from his eyes to her ran straight to the crown of roses. He would wager Varen was with her. Not nine, Aes Sedai. 11. Luce Theron murmured uneasily. It was the sound of a man wondering whether his back was against a wall. Rand wondered, too. 11 and 13 could take him as easily as scoop up a child, if he gave them the chance. Luce Theron began laughing softly, a hoarse, weeping sort of laugh. He had drifted again. For a moment, Rand considered Samara and Anila, then opened a gateway right there above the blue and gold patterned carpet in his bedchamber. Sullen as they were this morning, one of them was sure to blurt something before the visit to the farm was done, and remembering his previous visits, he did not want the students all looking over their shoulders for fear of 20 or so maidens. That sort of thing did little for a man's confidence, and they needed confidence if they were to survive. Taim was right on one point. Holding on to Sidin, a man knew he was alive, and it went beyond heightened senses. Despite the Dark One's taint, despite the feel of oily offal staining your bones, when the power was trying to melt you where you stood, freeze you till you shattered, when one misstep or one moment of weakness meant death, light, you knew you were alive. Still, he pushed the source away as soon as he was through the gateway, and not only to rid himself of the taint before his stomach emptied itself. It seemed worse than it had been, more vile, if that was possible. His real reason for abandoning the power was that he did not think he dared face Taim with Sidine in him and Luce Theron in his head. The clearing was browner than he remembered, more leaves crackling under his boots and still fewer on the trees. Some of the pines were completely yellow, and a number of leather leaves stood dead, gray and bare. But if the clearing had changed, the farm was altered almost beyond recognition. The farmhouse looked in much better repair with its new thatch, and the barn had certainly been rebuilt entirely. It was much larger than before, and did not lean at all. Horses filled a large corral beside the barn, and the pens of cows and sheep had been moved farther away. The goats were penned now as well, and neat rows of coops held the chickens. The forest had been cleared back. Over a dozen long white tents made a row beyond the barn, and nearby stood the frames for two buildings much larger than the farmhouse, where a cluster of women sat outside doing their sewing and watching a score of children roll hoops and toss balls and play with dolls. The biggest change was the students, most in close-fitting high-collared black coats and few sweating. There must have been well over 100 of all ages. Rand had had no idea Taim's recruiting trips had gone this well. The feel of Sidene seemed to fill the air. Some men practiced weaves, setting fire to stumps or shattering stones or snaring each other in coils of air. Others channeled to haul water, the buckets gripped with air, or to push dung carts from the barn or stack firewood. Not everyone was channeling. Henry Haslin had a line of bare-chested men under his eye, working the forms with practice swords. With only a fringe of white hair and a bulbous red nose, Haslin sweated more than his students and doubtless was wishing for his wine, but he watched and corrected as sharply as when he was master of the sword for the Queen's Guards. Sarek, a gray-haired red water goshin, with no right hand, had two shirtless rows under his stony eyes. One was kicking as high as their heads, pivot and kick, then pivot and kick with the other foot, over and over. The other punched the air in front of them as fast as they could. All in all, it was a far cry from the pitiful handful Rand had seen the last time. A black-coated man just short of his middle years planted himself in front of Rand. He had a sharp nose and a sneering mouth. "And who are you?" he demanded in a Terrabonner accent. "I suppose you have come to the Black Tower to learn, yes? You should have waited in Camelin for the wagon to bring you. You could have had another day to enjoy that fine coat."
"I am Randall Thor," Rand said quietly. Quietly so as not to let out a sudden surge of anger. Civility cost nothing, and if this fool did not decide it was cheap at the price soon... If anything, the sneer deepened.
"So you are him, are you?"
He looked Rand up and down insolently.
"You do not look so grand to me. I think that I myself could..."
A flow of air solidified just before it clipped him under the ear, and he collapsed in a heap.
"Sometimes we need a hard discipline," Taim said, coming to stand over the man on the ground. His voice was almost jolly, but his dark, tilted eyes stared close to murder at the man he had clubbed.
"You cannot tell a man he has the power to make the earth shake, then expect him to walk small."
The dragons climbing the sleeves of his black coat glittered in the sunlight. Thread of gold would do for the one, but what could make the blue shine so? Abruptly, he raised his voice.
"Kisman! Rochade! Drag Tolvar away, and douse him until he wakes. No healing, mind you. Maybe an aching head will teach him to mind his tongue."
Two men in black coats, younger than Rand, came running and bent over Tolvar, then hesitated, glancing at Taim. After a moment, Rand felt Sidene fill them. Flows of air lifted a limp Tolvar, and the pair trotted away with him, floating between them.
"I should have killed him long ago,"
Luce Theron panted.
"I should have—"
There was a stretching toward the source.
"No, burn you,"
Rand thought.
"No, you don't. You're only a bloody voice."
With a fading wail, Luce Theron fled. Rand took a slow breath. Taim was looking at him, wearing that almost smile.
"You teach them healing?"
"The little I know, first thing, even before how not to sweat to death in this weather. A weapon loses its utility if it's going to be laid up with the first wound. As it is, I have had one kill himself drawing too deeply and three burn themselves out. But no one has died from a sword yet."
He managed to put a good deal of contempt into the word sword.
I see, Rand said simply. One dead and three burned out.
Did Aes Sedai lose that many in the tower? But then, they went slowly. They could afford to go slowly.
What is this black tower the fellow was talking about? I don't like the sound of it, Taim.
Luce Theron was mumbling and moaning again, just short of making words. The hawk-nosed man shrugged, studying the farm and the students with a proprietary pride.
A name the students use. You could not go on calling this just the farm.
They certainly did not feel right about it. They wanted something more.
The black tower to balance the white tower.
He tilted his head, looking at Rand almost sideways.
I can suppress it if you wish. It is easy enough to take a word from men's lips.
Rand hesitated. Easy enough to take a word from their lips, perhaps, but not from their minds. It did have to be called something. He had not thought of that. Why not the Black Tower? Though looking at the farmhouse and the framing, larger but only wood, the name did make him smile.
Let it stand.
Maybe the White Tower had begun as humbly. Not that the Black Tower would ever have time to grow into anything to rival the white. That erased his smile, and he looked at the children sadly. He was playing as much as they, pretending there was a chance of building something that might last.
Assemble the students, Taim. I have a few things to say to them.
He had come expecting to gather them around him, and then, seeing their numbers, maybe to speak from the back of the rickety cart that now seemed to have vanished. Taim had a platform for making addresses, though, a plain block of black stone dressed and polished so finely that it shone like a mirror in the sunlight, with two steps cut into the back. It stood in an open area beyond the farmhouse, the ground beaten bare and flat and hard around it. The women and children gathered to one side to watch and listen. From the block, Rand had a chance to see clues to how far Taim's recruiting had ranged. Jahar Narishma, whom Taim had pointed out, the young man with the spark, had dark eyes as big as a girl's, a pale face filled with confidence, and hair in two long braids with silver bells on the ends. Actually, Taim had said he came from Arafel, but Rand recognized a Shinaran's shaved head and topknot on another man, and two with the transparent veils often worn by men and women alike in Taraban. There were tilted eyes from Saldaya and pale short fellows from Kyrian. One old man had a beard oiled and cut to a point, in imitation of a Tyran lord, which he assuredly was not with that creased leathery face, and no fewer than three wore beards that left their upper lips bare. He hoped Taim had not roused Samael's interest by recruiting into Ilion. He had expected mainly younger men, but fresh faces like Eben's and Fedwin's were balanced by gray or balding heads, some even more grizzled than Damer. Now that he thought of it, though, there was no mystery, no reason there should not be as many grandfathers who could be taught as boys. He did not know how to make speeches, but he had thought long and hard over what he wanted to say. Not the first part, but that was quickest done, with luck. You've all probably heard stories that the tower, the White Tower, has divided. Well, it's true. There are some rebel Aes Sedai who might just decide to follow me, and they've sent emissaries. Nine of them sitting in Camelin right now and waiting my pleasure. So when you hear about Aes Sedai in Camelin, don't believe any rumors. You know why they are here? And you can laugh in the face of the fellow with the rumor. There was no reaction. They just stood there staring up at him, hardly seeming to blink. Taim looked wry, very wry. Touching the larger bag in his pocket, Rand went on with the part he had labored over.
You need a name. In the old tongue, Aes Sedai means servants of all, or something very close. The old tongue doesn't translate easily. For himself, he knew only a few words,
some from Asmodian, a handful from Moraine, some that had seeped through from Luz Theron. Bashir had provided what he needed, though. Another word in the old tongue is Ashaman. It means guardian, or guardians. Or defender, and maybe a couple of other things. I told you the old tongue is very flexible. Guardian seems to be best, though. Not just any defender or guardian, though. You could not call a man who defended an unjust cause Ashaman, and never one that was evil. An Ashaman was a man who defended truth and justice and right for everyone. A guardian who would not yield even when hope was gone. The Light knew hope would go when Tarmon Gaydon came, if not before. That is what you are here to become. When you finish your training, you will be Ashaman. Murmurs rustled like leaves in a breeze, the name being repeated, but they died quickly. Attentive faces peered up at him. He could almost see ears pricking for his next words. At least that was a little better than before. The cloth bag gave off a faint clinking as he took it from his coat pocket. Aes Sedai begin as novices, then become accepted, then finally full Aes Sedai. You will have degrees too, but not like theirs. There will be no putting out or sending away among us. Send away? Light, he would do everything short of tying them hand and foot to stop anyone who wanted to go, if he could channel at all. When a man first comes to the Black Tower, he did not like that name, he will be